I saw Yomo, where is he? What can we do? This is Gullus within Geula. Gullus within Geula. One second. Yes, Rabbi Rubin should be here, right? Gullus within Geula. One second.
So those rumors last Sunday were wrong about the embassy moving around?
Yeah, no, the rumors were wrong, and then they accused, you know what's going on today, they accused the government of being against it, that they don't want this government, so Netanyahu spoke out in public before the cabinet meeting that they absolutely want the embassy here. Oh, we'll see what happens. America has enough problems right now. The have the leftists there, just like here. It's nothing. Sadna the Arachadu. They went to court. The court, you saw what happened. It's, unbelievable. Dovi, are you here today? What's the story? You look cold?
No.
You need a haircut? What's going on here? All right. You could get away with that in Slabodka, but not in Telz you could get away with it. Not so much in Hasidic yeshivas. Follow? Tamchei Tamim, and they wouldn't be happy. All right, Baruch Hashem, we owe time is here. Wish we could have a chip like that. But as Steve Breslin knows, those days are gone. Okay, my dear friends, it is Sunday, January 29th, 2017. Again, hello to my loyal students in front of me and to my many students across the face of the earth. Now, last week, people have been inundating me with questions about the Trumps and Shabbos and the Secret Service and Echeta. And I can put it very simply. I wish that it could have been a situation where they walked and were surrounded by Secret Service. If you recall, I mentioned to you that Ben-Gurion, Churchill's funeral, which fell on a Saturday, he walked from the hotel in London to the funeral, surrounded by British security. But with Trump, I don't want to comment at all, and I'll tell you why, very simply. None of us know the inside facts. They didn't. No, she's Jewish 100%. No, but she's Jewish 100%. But we're talking. Everyone was upset that the Ivanka and Jared. So we don't know what the inside story is. I want to be very honest with you. I don't know how many people wanted to kill Ben Gurion in London on that Shabbat. But I can tell you in America, looking from afar, maybe I'm wrong, but as someone who grew up in the United States and took exams in American history, I don't believe America has ever been so divided since the Civil War. That's the way I view it. And you have the left there, just like you have the left here. Some of them have said outrageous thoughts against President Trump. Some have even, I don't want to use the word, but a death wish. So, you know, you can never tell what the Secret Service in America was worried about with Ivanka and Jared. And it could be Pikuach Nefesh that the Psak was right, that they didn't do Chilul Shabbos, they're right, they're only talking where the Goyim drove, opened the car door, they went in. It was under very difficult circumstances. I just don't want to state an opinion, because I don't know the inside facts. But I think we shouldn't criticize, since none of us really know, we'd be wise not to criticize. Yes, Avi?
Does everything that there's a place for a moderate in America these days?
A moderate? I don't know, I'm not in America, but you're asking me what about Israel? In Israel too, you notice the left, sometimes I have the feeling they would rather not have a state than have a state that's right wing and considers this Eretz Yisrael that God gave it to us. You follow? I've seen time and again. All right, I don't want to. You heard what Steve just said. But what can we do? It's a democracy. People are entitled to their opinions. But you have to know not to, God forbid, hit or endanger a fellow citizen. We'll put it that way. All right, so that's, I just want to answer that question. I really can't have an opinion because I don't know the inside facts. I'm just explaining halachically. If the Secret Service came to me and said that they're death threats and that we can't allow them to walk, it is impossible to protect them properly when they're walking and not in an armored car that has endless layers of metal, it could be, I would also say, okay, do it without Chilul Shabbos D'Oraita, do what you can. It could be. All right. Now, I want to come back to last week's shiur, which also attracted a lot of attention, and I thank the people who commented. And we spoke last week, and today's a very, very important shiur. It's based upon last week's shiur. And this very difficult question, first of all, going back to the whole question of throwing away part of Yiddishkeit, because you're involved in talking to someone about becoming a good Jew, Oseik b'mitzvah, Pata min ha-mitzvah. So it seems the story on Rabbaron Cutler, a lot of people appreciated the story, because everyone who knows Hasidim and knows Litvakin understands what happens when you have a Yahrzeit, how different it is observed. And one person, Jacob Sasson, sent me an interesting letter, and he tells me a story, a Litvish story about Dr. Sarah Riga. I happen to know Dr. Sarah Riga. She's the granddaughter of Reb Simcha Zelig Riga. That was the Briska Dayan. Her father taught at Yeshiva University for many years, Moshe Aaron Riga. I hope you recognize the name. I knew him quite well. In his later part of his life, he lived in Israel. He has a son living here. I don't believe he has another child. That son, Dafka, is not religious. I've spoken about him many times. He was a basketball coach, he was a basketball personality here. And whenever I would hear the name on the radio, Simcha Zelig Riga, with the basketball news, that name, Simcha Zelig Riga, Reb Simcha Zelig Gon Shebegoinim, and this is his grandson. But Dr. Sarah Riga is a professor, and she's a solid in Yiddishkeit, 100%. And she published a memoir. I've read it this past summer. Very fascinating memoir that her father wrote about his youth and Brisk and Reb Simcha Zelig and Reb Chaim. Very fascinating memoir. And he says, I just listened to your story about Rabbaron Cutler. I wanted to add a Litvish story about Dr. Sarah Riga, granddaughter of Reb Simcha Zelig. Shortly after Dr. Riga published the memoirs of her father, Reb Moshe Aaron Riga, I was davening Shachris in Mount Sinai Synagogue in Washington Heights. And I noticed that she was saying Kaddish. I went over to her after davening and asked her if it's her father's yahrzeit. She said, yes, it's my father's yahrzeit. So I said to her, the neshama should have an aliyah, which we say at the yahrzeit, she said adamantly, not where I come from, a Litvak doesn't say that. I was somewhat stunned and taken aback, as I had never heard someone protest that line. I asked her, so what does a Litvak say? A Litvak says, get over it. Now, what does it mean, get over it? So it means the yahrzeit, maybe she was fasting, the quicker the better the day ends. The Litvak doesn't have the soul of a chassid. A chassid, she's a nice lady. I wouldn't say she was just rude. But that's what we spoke about. A chassid, a hilula, a kiddush, a zolden shabbat haban aliyah. And you saw Rabbaron Cutler, the story I told with Mrs. Revel. People love the story, but they can't appreciate as much as I can, because I still see Mrs. Revel so frum, so tamimistic, raised in Marietta, and she says, the Kovna Rav, the Kovna Rav. And his attitude was, he says to Dr. Revel, what? You also observe that I think the word was shtuyot, who the mishagas, whoever heard of yartzeit and shas? All right. Anyway, but minig Yisrael is minig Yisrael, and we shouldn't forget that. Now, then we went into the whole question, and we're going to roll in today's shia. Can you count the Mechalos Shabbos for the minyan? Does the Mechalos Shabbos, can you give him an aliyah? And you see Rav Menashe Klein, and he quotes the Melamed Lahoil, and the Melamed Lahoil opens up a world for us. It is so sad. It is literally a description of Germany, which is the description of America, a description of England, a description of Australia. I hate to say this. It used to be a description of the state of Israel. Baruch Hashem, I don't think it's accurate anymore.
Not a reform or conservative in the meaning. Conservative just said non-Jews to become members of their
synagogue. They're going to say that, but here it's, we're talking about a frum shul and a Mechalos Shabbos. But we're dealing, what is their status? So, as the Melamed Lahoil said, that today there are more of them than us. He's talking about Germany, that the frum Jews are an absolute minority. And those that are not frum, they are the majority. And you see, that leads to the question, what is a Jew? Who is a Jew? What is Judaism? And it could be when you reach that state of mind, and this is what he's saying, and it's very powerful, that when you reach that level, that everyone around you is not frum, then in your mind, you think a Jew has choice. You think being from, it's like you want to be a member of the Masons. You know what I'm talking about, right? The Masons. I'll never forget Rabbi Belkin came to me. I had a unique relationship with Shmuel Belkin. And it was a time when none of the students were close to him. But without going into detail, if you read Washington, you'll understand a little bit of why we had that close relationship. And this I don't write about in Washington. But one time Dr. Belkin came to me, said, Rabbi Rotkoff, I need you, l'dachton fameh ateva, you have to do a favor for me. As I said, what's the story? And he wanted me to speak in, I think it was the Upper West Side. I may be wrong, it may have been the Upper East Side. It was a Mason Lodge. And they had an opening. This time they wanted a rabbi to give a benediction. So I understood from Dr. Belkin there was some heavy money in that lodge. I need not tell you, the Upper West Side, the Upper East Side. So I went. I went to the lodge, and I'll never forget that experience. I can swear 90% of the people were Jews. And they start the evening with incense, with puff schmuff, with one guy is wearing a stupid costume. It was mamish a sight to see. And then I gave the invocation. And they thanked me, they blessed me, and they told, we'll tell Dr. Belkin how pleased we are. All right, I went back to Maplewood, New Jersey. I was a youngster then. Now, you know, today I don't have that energy to go from YU to the Upper West Side, give the invocation, speak. I couldn't eat there, obviously, and then get back to New Jersey. All right, but you see, it's an interesting question, what the Masons believe in the Solomonic Temple. You understand, it's not simple. They've been accused.
It's not a bonus.
No, I know it's not about that.
They have to believe in God,
and I checked that out. It's not a Avodah Zarah. On the other hand, some of the things they do with the incense, it's really a ceremony. Now, when I walked out of there, I thought to myself, you know, those people are their Jews, they choose to be, but they're not any better than any other Jew. It's a choice. You want to be a Mason, be a Mason, but be a Shomer Shabbos at least. I think there were rabbis who reached high rank in the Messianic Lodge. Can you give me names? Rabbi Apple, Raymond Apple of Australia. Sydney. He's a fine rabbi. No wonder he's an Orthodox rabbi, 1,000%. So here he was a Mason. I know in America too there were some rabbis who were Masons. So you see, La Havdil.
Remember Nathan Zemel?
Of course, I remember.
His father Charlie was a third degree Mason.
So here you have another example. Okay.
Oh, whatever
he had,
the high.
The high.
At least 30 seconds.
30 oh, seconds.
Whatever, yeah.
He, the highest degree. Okay. So, Lower Leinu, the average Jew views our observance like we're Masons. You have a choice. A Jew can be a Mason, a Jew can be Orthodox. You see, and this point, I have to tell you, by the Melamed Lahoil, is unbelievably powerful, and you'll see the halakhic implications. Now, they also quote the Shaul Umeshiv, where he's Melamed Zchut on the Jews in America, that their Chilul Shabbos is not Chilul Shabbos, which disqualifies, it's Tinok Shenishba. And if you recall, I mentioned that they say the Chafetz Chaim as well had a very lenient attitude to the Jews in America. So Yomo gave me the Nitzchei Yisrael. I'm familiar with the Nitzchei Yisrael. You know what the Nitzchei Yisrael is, first of all. The Nitzchei Yisrael, the Chafetz Chaim, you're familiar, the Chafetz Chaim wrote one book, Machne Yisrael. What was Machne Yisrael? For the Jewish soldiers in the Russian army, the Polish army, it's a very famous volume, a little volume. It's been translated into English. It probably has a Yiddish translation. He probably wrote it in Yiddish. I have the Hebrew version. And it's telling the soldiers, even though you're in the army, you have to be a good Jew. You have to do whatever you can. And he goes into all the halachot, and that's the famous volume. If you're forced to eat tarfis, you're not allowed to suck the meat out. You've heard that? Not allowed to suck the bones, giddy. Why? That you should know it's tarfis. He paskins first, you can have the soup. Better to eat them than eating the meat. A very fascinating volume. But the idea being, he wants the people, even though they're in the army, they should retain a sense of Jewishness. So in Nitchei Yisrael, what does Nitchei Yisrael mean? Machane Yisrael is written for the soldiers. Machanecha Kadosh, written for the soldiers. Nitchei Yisrael, by the way, I have to tell you, in Israel with Zaycha, we don't touch Machane Yisrael. We don't have to. There must be 100 books already written halacha for the tzava. And I know I got my grandsons, I got to have a set in my house, Rabbi Rimon. His two volumes are fabulous. Rav Minha Hazeich Tzadik Levracha. So many volumes have been written for the army that we're way beyond Machne Yisrael, because this is a kosher army, a Sabbath-observing army. But what do you do, Bitachon Shoteif? And all the hundreds of little questions that come up, we have a world that's written the world of Pesach. So Nitchei Yisrael was written for the dispersed Jews, the Jews in Australia, the Jews in South America, particularly the Jews in America and Canada. And here, if you'll turn to page 14 and go to the footnote, and you'll understand the Chafetz Chaim very well. He's pleading with the Jews in, let's say, America, don't throw God away. Don't have the attitude, and I'm putting into my words, but you'll see it in the Chafetz Chaim, that because you passed the Statue of Liberty and everyone threw their tefillin and their shekels into the water, and by the way, this is not fairy tales. We have eyewitness accounts. We have memoir literature. I told you, Harry Fischel, his cousin meets him at that Battery Park, wherever he came in, where he's before Battery Park, what do they call the island?
Ellis
Island. Cousin meets him in Ellis Island and tells him, take your yarmulke off. So people had the attitude, religion remained in the other country. America is different. And he pleads with the Jews, the Chafetz Chaim, you know, he was... His simplicity was overwhelming. His tamimistikait, overwhelming. He pleads with the Jews, please, God is in America too. God is in Canada too. You didn't throw God away. You must observe Shabbat. You must observe Kashrut. He's pleading with them. But you can see his attitude. Okay. Then I also mentioned last week, and here I have to thank Yomo. He came up with research. I mentioned last week the Brother Daniel case. The Brother Daniel case haunts us until today. And it was, I was wrong. The decision was, I think, 4-1 that he's not a Jew. The 5-4 decision and you can check this out, is later with the question of the officer Shalit, the officer in the Israeli army, are his children Jewish or not, even though his wife is a Polish Catholic, and there was by one vote that the children are Jewish. But Romo did the research, and my memory was correct. That what does it mean, who is a Jew? Exactly what I told you. The former has a secular interpretation as a normal instruction in everyday speech and as used by Jewish people. And in everyday speech, people don't consider a galach walking around with the clothes of a monk and with a crucifix, he's not a Jew. Halachically, he is a Jew. But four judges viewed him as not Jewish. You know what's amazing? Mahaseach Mimeich Yetzehu, who was the one dissenting opinion? I yet knew this man, Chaim Cohn. Name mean anything to you? Chaim Cohn, Talmud Chacham Mufak, German origins, 100% from his family, from went to Merkaz Harab, and then broke with Kol HaTorah Kula. And he was the dissenting opinion. Everyone born a Jew remains a Jew. You can have a crucifix. You are a Jew. But it was the Rav who called our attention in class when this was going on to the Rambam in Perek Gimel Hilchot Tshuva, HaPoresh Min HaTzibur. And Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein expanded upon it, and that was the article I referred you to in Judaism in the early 60s. It's the first article Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein published. And I remember people saying then, you can't appreciate it today, when you have Americans who, I know one kid who grew up in America, third generation America, just published the volume 370 pages on classic Aguna and Mamzei Rut. Who would ever dream that we American kids would be able to publish volumes on that level with that material in it? But in 1962, 63, I remember people saying, it's a different America today. If Rabbi Lichtenstein, Aaron Lichtenstein, he was a youngster, this article is based upon Torah sources. And that was Rabbi Aaron's article. Now, let me go one step further and take you into today's shiur, which has tremendous ramification, halacha l'maisa. What the Malamed Lahoil said, Reb Moshe Feinstein says independently, he did not know the Malamed Lahoil. He did not consult the Malamed Lahoil. I told you, when the case came up of a coin to a Gioret, and there was a cooler in the Malamed Lahoil, Reb Moshe said, it cannot be. And he said, Ein hazeh tachet yadi. And he didn't bother to tell his son, remember what I told you, to go around the corner and borrow the book from Oitzah Sfarim, from Yankel Goldman, 33 Canal Street. But Reb Moshe's thinking is a mirror image of the Malamed Lahoil. But before I begin, Avi, you had a question to ask.
About Chaim Cohn, his new street named after him in Arnona.
It was a famous individual here, but it was hard to believe what he came from, what his education was, and where he wound up. And with gusto, it wasn't just not from Kaliyachayad, not from in thought, I don't know, maybe he remained from in some sort of practice. Do you remember him, Yitzchak, when you came in Aliyah?
You
got to
give the reason why. He turned.
Why he turned?
Because he was a Kohen, wanted to marry a divorcee.
Ach, beseder, you know what I mean?
The rabbis wouldn't find a kula for him.
Can you find a kula for a Kohen to marry a
Grusha?
I have yet to find a kula.
You can't do that?
He's not a halal. His children will be halalim. But he has to divorce her. That's the halacha.
Well, he can become a member of a Shevet Levi and not be a Kohen.
My dear friends, a Kohen cannot renounce his kahuna.
Why not?
Why not? Can you renounce your Judaism? You're a Yisra.
I'm a Kohen.
Yeah, we all
wasn't getting any business in funerals. She says, I'm a member of David Levy.
I told the story last week in class, or 2 weeks ago in class. I knew a Kohen in Philadelphia. He held a whole session where he renounced his kahuna. He's now a Levi. No? That's a Kohen? That's a conservative rabbi. That's what he was. Give Rabbi Riskin credit. When he was rabbi of Lincoln Square and had to give the eulogy, they from Riverside Chapel, they brought the microphone outside and he gave the eulogy standing outside the chapel. Give him credit. But the coin's a coin. What can we do? That's the halacha. What you say, the Malamud Lahoil, so if you have a situation, according to the Malamud Lahoil, where you see you're going to lose the family for Judaism altogether, so he paskin, let them get married civilly. He shows from the Rambam, it doesn't have Malkut, it doesn't have a fee of Malkut. You have to look at the Lamed Lahoil, and you'll see the Rambam, and let them get married civilly, and the children are halalim. But to say it's permissible, it's not. That's what the Shlomo Goren was samachan when he married the famous case in the early 70s.
Judy Wise Rosemary.
Right.
Who was also Orthodox.
Was.
Then was.
Turned.
Same reason. She was married to a Menuhin. And she had no way to get a divorce, so she turned Jewish.
Let me quote the Rav to you, Mori Rebbe, word by word, our Rebbe. Rebbe said, the halacha is beautiful. The problem is that Jews create the problems. You understand? The guy should have given a divorce. Guy doesn't give a divorce. Beat the hell out of him. Maknatan shamom omer rotzani. Ah, but then you have the problems, the civil liberties. How do you beat the guy up? How do you give him malkut? In Israel, they solve the problem. They throw the guy into jail, and if he's in jail anyway, they throw him into solitary. So we have ameliorated to a great degree the problem of the man-made aguna. Okay? In America, you have a real problem. The guys from Lakewood using the cattle prods are sitting in jail today. What did the wax get? 10 years in jail, I believe, if my memory is. Again, they're appealing it, but he's in jail. And I saw Sferim, he wrote, his father-in-law once gave me a sefer he wrote. It's upstairs in the library here. It's unbelievable. But the problem is, it wasn't entirely L'Shem Shemayim. They got paid $50,000. So right away, the judge, if you're going to make a case, it's L'Shem Shemayim, we had no choice. Plead with the judge, explain to the judge. So you might get a judge who put him on probation. But when they took such sums of money, that plea was gone. Okay, but anyway, the halacha is beautiful. Torah Hashem Tamima. It's Jews. And what about what happened to Shabbat? Can you explain it? I can't explain it. I was sick after Shabbat. Malka can't look at today's newspapers. Guy with a beard and payas kills his wife. Her hair is covered like this. You saw the picture. Children with payas, kills three little children, inches of force,
in Migdal.
You can explain it. The chief rabbi going to jail, my children, I was together with grandchildren, great-grandchildren, Shabbos, and the kids are saying, how could a man? So I told them, I agree with you. I said, I can understand Sheikhad, you take Sheikhad, you rab, but to take money to change halacha? And I apologize to my daughter in public. My daughter told me these stories 5 years ago, 6 years ago. I said to Taina, it can't be that he was with the gay. She said, now they have the check, the canceled check. This is one of the main charges. They can't prove $20 million he took. They could prove $5 million. But they have... Well, they couldn't move. It had to go to California to come here. What a story. I apologize for every word you told me was true. But what are we going to say? Get rid of Judaism? Get rid of... We should take Sheikhet. We should rob. We should steal. We should kill. Chas v'chalila. Torah Hashem Tamima. But people. And this is why I sadly say Hasidus conquered the world and... People like us, who grew up on the lap of Rabbi Yisrael Salanta, we are 1 out of 100,000. Okay?
Do you believe that the rabbinic establishment
who put him into power didn't know his personality,
Michael,
and his character?
Michael, if you would see one trace of Haredizatzi in Rakefet, your question is in order. Rakefet is a total religious Zionist who does not kowtow to anyone just because they're Haredi. I will kowtow to someone who's a tzaddik and can learn better than me. Outside of that, I kowtow to nobody. Your question is just what I taught my children on Shabbos. I will never vote Agudat Yisrael because I can tell you stories of what they have done to disgrace God's Torah 100%. And the example you're giving us is only one of, I can give you many more, but this is a shocking, shocking example. Let's come back.
He was a figurehead.
I know. Shocking. By the way, I taught his wife. Ofra Friedman is not only my student, but her aunt and uncle have been my neighbors for 48 years. We live on the same floor.
One other question about what you were talking about before. Do you know rabbis of big shuls who are kohanim? How do they function in terms of funerals?
Rabbi Riskin set the example. You eulogize from outside the shul.
Yeah, no other
they eulogize. Rabbi Riskin set the biggest example. They had a microphone, have a whole setup. Whenever he eulogized, he never had to enter the funeral chapel.
And what about going to the cemetery?
He doesn't go. Why do you need a rabbi?
You have
a chevra kaddish, you have a sexton, a big shul, a rabbi, a sexton. I would advise not to have a kohen, both rabbi and chazan and shamus. One of them should not be a kohen, okay? That would solve the problem. All right, now let's take on Rav Moshe. A few words about Rav Moshe. I told you the story, the children, I don't want to repeat. Fine, now we're ready for Rav Moshe. Rav Moshe Feinstein was the American posek. He was a Litvak. He was very, very independent. Rav Moshe, a little man, the nicest person alive, Aziskeit, Alts mit Ashmeichel, always with a smile. But when he reached the conclusion, you could not budge him. When you go through all his tshuvot, and particularly the first six volumes, seven volumes perhaps, are the most reliable, what's published after someone dies, the children, the grandchildren, doesn't have the same reliability of what you published during your lifetime. But when you go through the initial six volumes, I would say, there is not one issue where Rav Moshe changes his mind. What he paskened in Europe, he paskened in America. Once he reached the conclusion, as a Litvist and Posek, he's very different than Rav Avadja. I've lectured about this extensively years ago. He doesn't give you 100 sources. He deals with the Gemara, the Rashi, the Tosfot, the basic Rishonim, the Rambam, the Shulchan Aruch, the Ramah, the Beis Yosef, very few Achronim. Basically, he'll deal with the Noda B'Yehuda, deal with the Chatam Sofer. The Rebbe is exactly the same way. They don't get involved with endless Achronim. And this is the Litvische Shita. Rav Ovadia was a totally different ballpark. The Hungarians are someplace in the middle. If you're familiar with the Mitrat Yitzchak and the Chelkat Yoav, you'll see that the Hungarians are more with Bikiyat than Achronim, but on the other hand, certainly linked to the basic sources. Rav Avadja was far-reaching, and he was the classic Sfadik Posek. Rav Mordechai Eliyahu was not as far-reaching as Rav Avadja, but certainly
that was Rav Avadja
certainly more achronim than Rav Moshe. Certainly more achronim than Rav Moshe. Okay, now of all the topics Rav Moshe handled, the only topic where you find he has a gradual development is the topic of Geirut, of conversion. And here you're going to see that arriving at it from a totally different vantage point, Rav Moshe and the Malamed Lahoil, a German posek, and Rav Moshe reach exactly the same conclusion. Rav Moshe's psakim have unbelievably far-ranging implications on the contemporary scene. But let's begin with Moshe. There's a tshuva in the very first volume of the Yigrot Moshe, Orech Chaim. This was published in 1959. It's called Chelik Aleph. This is the volume I told you about. When this volume came out, we were dancing in the streets. This is the volume everyone was talking about, and this is, I live it. I remember the Rav finished shir, and we come over to Rebbe, and we say, Rebbe, your cousin just published the Yigrot Moshe. What do you think? And he was upset. What was he upset with? I remember like yesterday, Reb Moshe Asad liquid soap on Shabbos. He considered it no lot. You're creating bubbles. And the Rav said, he doesn't know what bubbles are. The Rav differed with that psak. He probably differed with other psakim as well, but I remember that was the one that he let out his reason why he wasn't as ecstatically happy as we were with the Orech Chaim Chelek, which ultimately is called Chelek Aleph. Now, Siman Chaf Gimel, he gets the classic question, can you count Mechalalei Shabbos to a minyan in order to say Kaddish, in order to say Kedusha? And this is a classic issue. Now, do you need a minyan? Obviously, you need a minyan, Davisha B'Kedusha. Well, the Zeman is much less of a problem. This is davening before God. Zeman, he wants to bench, right? I would count them to a Zeman a lot more easily than with davening a minion. And now, tell me, you need a minion. How many of you have learned Masechet Megillah? Every kid for his bar mitzvah. I see a lot of kids, if they do a Gemara, they make a seam in Masechet Megillah, which I can understand, because Megillah is... everything in Megillah is familiar with. It's Megillah and Tamin, Achashverosh, it's Haggadah, it's Halacha. But the end part is Kriyat HaTorah, right or wrong, Davisha B'Kedusha, something a kid is familiar with. So we do have a concept of Parsin Al Hashmar, right? You recognize that? And what does it mean, Parsin Al Hashmar, right? That itself is a question. But what do we do, halacha l'maisa? I don't want to go into the whole, because it's not so simple. But what do we do, halacha l'maisa? Alex comes late to shul. So he says chatzi kaddish and he says baruch hu. The other people already davened. Kedusha. How many times do you have that mincha? You're finished with mincha, some chassidish guy walks in, falls into shul a minute before shkia, and he gives a klav. And he makes a hecha kedusha. No, everyone else heard kedusha. There's only one person chayav at that time. That person, parson al hashma, kaddish, kedusha, he's the only one that really is obligated. But he has to do it with a minyan. You follow? Are you with me? No, Reb Moshe says right away, from that we see, if you have a minyan, you're allowed to say Chatzi Kaddish, to say Kedusha, to say a regular Kaddish. It doesn't mean everyone has to be obligated. All right? Very fascinating. Reb Moshe's insight here is very innovative and it would seem to me very accurate. Parson al Hashma. You have an obligation. You didn't say Kedusha. You didn't hear Kedusha. You didn't say Kaddish. You didn't say Baruch Hu. By the way, isn't that the Minhag in Eretz Yisrael at Maariv, the Ashkenazic Minhag, that every Maariv we say Baruch Hu at the end? You know why we say Baruch Hu at the end? If someone walked in and he came in late, so at least they'll hear the Baruch Hu at the end. I can tell you in Russia in 1981, when... I was teaching, and I was saying Kaddish that year for my father, Zichrona Levracha. So at the end of teaching, I would always say Kaddish the Rabbanan, the Meikin Hadin. You all know that we should say Kaddish the Rabbanan at the end of every Shayur. It's a question why we don't, but we should. We say it, and then you say Kaddish the Rabbanan. So I would say Kaddish the Rabbanan, and I would say Baruch Hu. And I remember Jews there looking and saying it's the first time they heard someone talk to God. It was like shocking to some of the people who came. This was particularly the lectures that were not part of the religious Zionist element there, but part of these general Siruvnik community. Let's say Yuli Edelstein was part of that community. Yuli Chomiansky, Zichrona Levracha, they were part of that community. Asirei Tzion, a lot of Asirei Tzion came from that community. It's interesting that the religious community had a little bit less percentage-wise. It's like the KGB figured out, all they want to do is talk to God. They're a bunch of morons. That God exists. God, opium of the masses, you know, Karl Marx, etc., etc. But the Siruvnik complained that they should be Zionists and not believe in God. That's really bad for Russia, because it shows they really have another nationalistic identity outside of the communist Soviet identity. But who was obligated there? Was I allowed to do it? Absolutely, there was a minyan. I wanted to say Kaddish, I wanted to say Baruch Hu. I didn't have a minyan that night. I could only get a minyan in the morning in the Akapova synagogue. But once we were in action, unless I was with Frum people, and then we never had a minyan. We weren't allowed. The Mossad, the cautions, I couldn't have more than five people at my shirim, because December 1980, they broke the shir up. The KGB came in, and the our branch of the Mossad, where the great people who knew what was going on in Russia analyzed it, said there were too many people there. You had 20 people in the apartment. What if it was like raving a red flag in front of the KGB? So Reb Moshe, what he says here is very, very important. But then, Reb Moshe, what about you want to make a regular minyan? Kriyat HaTorah. Can these people count? And here he goes into the whole concept, why a Mechalel Shabbos, what we quoted last week, why can't a Mechalel Shabbos be a Shaychet? And he quotes, you'll see the sources, it's in the Star, it's in Chulin, Tosfot, that if you're not a religious Jew, the whole concept of being bar zvicha, the Torah doesn't apply to you. It's like, it's beyond you. It's not part of you. You cannot count for the minyan. You cannot be a shaykhet. You're not part of the minyan. You don't have the obligation. It's like you've exempted yourself from the Jewish people. And Reb Moshe raises the issue, how do we view it? Can you count them? Can't you count them? Can you call them to the Torah? Can you read the Torah? What does it mean reading the Torah? If one person has a chiyuv, see here already you need at least rov minyan, according to other Rishonim and some of the Achronim, you need much more than six. You need 9 people who are obligated. You need 10 people who are obligated. Here, I'll give you an example. The Rav used to come in from Boston on Monday morning. He used to drive in. These are the days he drove in. His wife used to drive. I can still remember the black Dodge parked on Amsterdam Avenue. That was the Rav's car, the Soloveitchik car. Okay? And he drove in, he parked, they lived across the street at his mother's apartment. He didn't hear Kriyat HaTorah that morning. He didn't daven with a minyan in Boston. They left early, they had a big rush hour. A long trip to Boston, to New York. How many hours is it driving? 5 hours. That's chatichat zman. They stopped in the middle, whatever. And he gave shiur that day. He gave shiur that afternoon. He had to be in New York Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, had to be in Boston. Generally, it was Tuesday, Wednesday in New York. But something in Boston, he had to be back. So the Rebbe would say at the end of Shia, how many of you didn't hear Kriyas HaTorah today? No, I hate to tell you, the level of minyan attendance among our people at our time and YU, remember, we lived in the Bronx, we lived in Manhattan, we had a rush uptown, we had a rush on the bus, we had a rush on the subway. How many of you caught minyan? And remember, the minyanim then, there would be one minyan very early in the morning. Everyone had to go to work. a yeshiva kid to go daven 6:30 in the morning. He was just waking up. So within a minute, 10-20 people would gather around the Rav, and we'd go into the Beis Medrash, and we would daven mincha, and like Shabbos afternoon, we would have a Kriyat HaTorah right after Ashrei, and then we would daven Shmon Ashrei, okay? And now imagine, I fall in from the plane, I missed Shachrit, I missed Kriyat HaTorah, Elah HaStul, not listen to Rakefet, I say, El Al would corner the market of Jews going and coming from Israel if on every plane they had a little area with an Urim Kodesh and a Sefer Torah, not only davening, but Kriyas HaTorah on the plane. I'd like to see the other airlines, what were United, whatever airlines, fly to America, Delta, I'd like to see them equal El Al. All right, Rakefet has said it many times, but somehow El Al is not yet picking it up. Yomo, I got in, I missed davening, I missed Kriyas HaTorah, it's Monday, I come into Grishka. How many of you, you're in there? Anyway, I need 10 guys, I'm going to lay in for myself. Can I do it? Absolutely not. Kriyas HaTorah, it's a whole question, is it a chiyuv on the tzibur or a chiyuv on the individual? It's a lot of lumdus on this, it's not for now. But we heard the Rav many times play with this topic and quote Reb Chaim and quote his other Zay, the Rebbe Yerushalmi. And that's when Rebbe Yerushalmi said to the Rav, the Rav had a tremendous proof that Rebbe Yerushalmi is right. So Rebbe Yerushalmi said to him, it doesn't matter what you say, when your other grandfather, Retzach Arayin, when he convinces himself, his concept is correct, he'll take any source you'll give him and twist it to fit his iron type conclusions. He's like iron, Basel. He'll warp it in to the source that he is right. It's not going to help me. You're quoting a Mishnah in Megillah. If you know what I'm talking about, you understand, but you at least understand Rebellion's comment on Reb Chaim. By the way, Rebellion is not the only way to say that about Reb Chaim. The Sri Deyesh has similar comments on Reb Chaim, which we once spoke about in class years ago. So, you see, Reb Meisher is saying, the truth of the matter is, maybe these people have nothing to do with Kedusha. Maybe they have nothing to do with Kaddish. Maybe they have nothing to do with Kriyat HaTorah. But on the other hand, a Jew is a Jew. He's not observant. But if he's coming to shul at that moment, it shows you he wants to be part of the minyan. He wants to be part of the davening. So you should understand, Ramesh is not happy about it, but he paskins lalacha, you certainly can count him for the minyan to say Kaddish Kedusha. It could be even Bidi Avad, you can count him for Kriyat HaTorah, and this is what Reb Moshe paskins lahalacha. Okay? That shuvah, that's only dealing with davening. It's not earth-shaking. Halacha l'maisa, I don't know of a Rav in America who, in a young Israel, in a regular Orthodox shul, a Chabad Rav, if a Machal Shabbos walks in, they'll count him for a minyan. We'll always give him the benefit of the doubt that the fact that he's coming in shows he wants to be part of what's happening. The stories are legendary, they swear they're true. Growing up in the Bronx, I can vouch that this probably happened 1,000 times over. There were lots of good people in the Bronx who weren't Jewish. The Italians and the Jews have very similar family values. You know, the mafia, they could shoot you by day, kill you by night, but they treated their wives and their daughters with respect. They didn't tolerate misplay. Very strong family, good Jewish values. You see it in the television series, Everyone Loves Raymond, where, you know, it's hard to believe that Raymond's mother, I daven every morning with her first cousin. She just died, by the way. But a good deal of the family was Chozrim B'tshuva, they're all over Israel, America, very well-known Orthodox family, and that's a first cousin. So a lot of times they spoke Yiddish. You didn't have to be Jewish, you didn't have to be Caucasian. You all know. And especially in the Bronx, you all know the Secretary of State, Colin Powell, spoke the perfect Yiddish. He grew up in the Bronx on Findlay Avenue. He delivered furniture for the Jewish owned store. I lived it.
No. He's Irish. He grew up in the Lower East Side. And there's a movie
where he speaks Yiddish.
2 seconds, 5 seconds, whatever it is.
But it's good Yiddish. James Cockney. Okay.
Perfect Yiddish.
Perfect Yiddish. No, okay. So you should know the stories are they were looking for at center. Italians walked in, they counted them for the minion. So that much you have to be careful. You have to be sure the person is Jewish. He can be an Oy Yisrael, but you can't count him for the minion. But a Jew, even if he's not observant, it's hard to say he's not considered a Jew with an obligation. Yes, the fact that he wants to come and be part of the minion. All right, we have Moshe B'dievet, you can count him in. Now we come into the big leagues. The first volume of Yoredeya, we're talking what was published a few years. This was Mamash a few years after the Or HaChaim volume, Siman Kuf Nun Tet.
Why did only B'dievet even count him?
Because he's not a from Jew. The question is, if he's not a from Jew, he can't be a shaychet, right? The Gemara, if he can't be a shaychet, how do you count him for the minyan? He's not into it. He's not a bar kedusha for kaddish, for kedusha, for shmona esrei, for kriyat haTorah. He can't be a bar zvicha. See, if you say he's not a bar zvicha, then he's not a bar minyan. But I agree with you, if he's coming to shul, Moshe says, that fact shows he wants to be part. And if he wants to be part already, b'diavad, if you don't have a choice, you can count.
Right, but if we're going to those other cases, no, where they're saying they can't be a shulchet, or saying they're a mumar, no, and even b'diavad, they can't be a shulchet, no?
If you go with that, you're asking a good question, but I'll tell you that today, if you take Reb Moshe, what we're going to get involved with here, it'd be very hard to parcel out a shulchet. Let's say in you have a shaychet who's not a total Shom Shabbos in Russia at the time of the communists, be very hard to passel his shchita. You follow?
Yeah,
because he's caught up in a world where this is considered normal religious behavior. But you'll see. Be very hard to passel out the mila as well. Exactly. If he's a moler and he's doing it with a bracha and he has kavana, even though he's not a total Shema Mitzvah, but it shows, as far as that goes, he is a Bar Zvicha, he is a Bar Mila. But that's why Reb Meishi doesn't give a black and white answer. He shows Panim Lekam, Panim Lekam. But Halacha L'Maisa, B'diyeved, he understands the rabbi who does it. Now, this tshuva was written Reb Nachman to Nachman Yosef Goldstein. I don't know who he is. And the tshuva was written 1950. So this is exactly America after World War II, with all the difficulty and everything that I described, that my chaver and Rabbi Avram Lamb described to you. Everyone went to Daven Shabbos morning 6:30, came home, made kiddush, changed their clothes, went to work. It was a different world. Now, What is Geirut? So Geirut, you know, there's the formal concept you have to have for a woman tefillah, for a man mila utfila. But the most important part of Geirut is Kabbalat Mitzvot. You can take a non-Jew and put him into a mikvah. You can do a Brit Mila. That doesn't make a Jew. A Jew means he accepts upon himself Kabbalat O Malchut Shemayim. Have any of you ever been part of a Beit Din to do a Geirut? So if you look into the Gemara in Yevama, Daf Mem Vav, Mem Zayin, the Rambam, Hilchat Isuri Biyam, I believe it's Perikit Gimel, but you'll see what's involved, that the person, first of all, before you do the actual act, so Rabbi Rubin, for instance, specializes in teaching would-be converts. He teaches people for months, am I right or wrong, before you take them to the Beit HaMikdash. Well, and you have to teach them. So the Gemara in Yevamot says you have to tell them some of the mitzvot. The Gemara acknowledges that you may not be able to teach him everything. Learning is a lifelong process, at least for Jews. We have a very different religion. Our religion, this is why our religion is very attractive to intellectual people. And many non-Jews have told me this, because it's a religion that puts the stress on learning. You're constantly learning. It's a beautiful thought. It's not like you go to church and you're finished. We're never finished. We're constantly, forget about the mitzvot masiyot. That's a small part of our life. But the learning, this is big in our lives. So you have to, and then you take them to mikvah. And while he's in the mikvah, or she's in the mikvah, you ask them questions. First of all, do you give up your belief in Jesus? Do you give up your belief in Trinity? You have to give up your belief in the old religion. Do you accept the Torah, Shebichtav, the Torah Shebaal Peh? And you mention some of the mitzvot, Shabbat, Kashrut, Taret Mishpacha. You can ask them to say Shema Yisrael. Now, for the Beit Din, in the mikveh, in the process of Kabbalat mitzvot, so the Gemara uses the word, you need Talmidei Chachamim there. So the question Reb Moshe got was a very interesting question. When you make a Beit Din for Geirut, do all three have to be Talmidei Chachamim? Very interesting question. Generally, you make a Beit Din for Geirut, you have the Rav, he can bring his Chazan, he can bring his shamus. The Chazan doesn't have to be a Talmud Chacham. A Chazan has to have a pleasant voice, has to be a Yorei V'Shalem. Today we go back to the what Chazal already spoke about. Rakefet could never be a Chazan, even if it had a beautiful voice. Of course, he lacks a beard. You have to have a beard, right or wrong. Fine, but it doesn't make him a great Talmud Chacham. A sexton is just someone who knows how to run a synagogue properly, who's organized, who can keep track of the yard sites. Can you imagine a balabas has a yard site and you forgot to give him shlishi the Shabbos before, or you forgot to give him mafti the Shabbos before? That's a suicidal, right or wrong. So yeah, I see my son-in-law who runs the shul, they have a printout of every pasher in the Torah who has yard site that week, who has a birthday that week, and that's the way they give out the aliyot. So it doesn't have to be a big Talmud Chacham.
In reality, so, Mamet is the least important.
We're well aware about that. That's at the time of the Mishnah. You know what the Mishnah says in Megillah. You give the maftir, you give him other rewards. He's a Baal Tefillah, Baal Tefillah, because he did us a favor and took the maftir. Today, people give their lives fighting for maftir. It's an interesting thing. The status of the maftir changed from the time of the Mishnah. All right, it could be. There may be reasons why it was, every guy didn't have a good voice, it was hard, it was difficult. Today, people maftir. But, do you need three Talmidei Chachamim? The Gemara mentions the word Talmidei Chachamim. So Reb Moshe says, very correctly so, that the Gemara mentions the word Talmidei Chachamim because you need someone on the Beit Din who will know how to conduct the affair, how to conduct the Geirut, how to know what questions to ask, who will know what Kabbalat Mitzvot means. But the other two members of the Beit Din don't have to be Talmidei Chachamim. They just have to be there because it's a Beit Din L'Kiyum HaDavar. The immersion in the mikvah, the Kabbalat Mitzvot, the whole process doesn't take place if there isn't a Beit Din. It's the Beit Din Kiyum HaDavar that creates this metaphysical mystery, miracle, that a non-Jew becomes Jewish. Okay? So that's what Reb Moshe paskens. Ah, very nice, fine. I can tell you, I was once sitting in the Beis Medrash minding my business on Amsterdam Avenue. I was, learning with the Rav already. I was far from a Talmud Chacham. I don't want, I told you, I got smicha. What did we get smicha on? A few simanim in Yeridaya and 100 daf gemara, 200 daf gemara. All right, it's a lifetime process. So Rabbi Melech Shechter, you recognize the name? It's Reb Heschel's father comes into the Beis Medrash and he says, Ani, I need you. We have a gerid around the corner in the mikveh. There was a German mikveh built on Autobahn Avenue around the corner from the yeshiva. And took another person. We formed a Beit Din. That was a very interesting moment in my life because, believe it or not, we see a family converting. And not only do I know the family, but he's my boss. I was teaching, I don't want to mention any more, you shouldn't identify. I was teaching in a Talmud Torah. This individual was the president of the shul, and it was quite embarrassing. He is converting his wife, his children. Wow.
But that was like, not converting himself, you're saying?
His wife and children were converting. What was the story? No, he was not converting himself. What was the story? Thanks to the state of Israel. There was some big machlekes going on here, you know, about the personal status. Could be some of the incidents we spoke about in class. And the New York Times carried an article that you're only Jewish if your mother is Jewish. And it turns out that his wife's father was Jewish, but her mother was not. For all I know, her mother was an Italian, what we just spoke about. And he knew, he learned from the New York Times that his wife and children had to convert. And evidently he came to the RCA, or his rabbi sent him to the RCA, and Rabbi Melech Shechter then handled conversions for the RCA. And they were converted. I was on the Beit Din, but what a moment in time. But I wouldn't say I was a Talmud Chacham. I wouldn't say the other fellow with me, whoever it was, could have been my Chafrita, could have been Jerry Blau, I don't remember. We were not Talmid Chachamim. Maybe today we qualify to be low-level Talmid Chachamim. But then, but that's a Beit Din. Fine, good, Reb Moshe Paskins. My dear students, then Reb Moshe adds a paragraph. And this paragraph, to quote a rabbinic aphorism, Meravsin Igra, it breaks your mind. Am I right, Yomo? Meravsin Igra, it breaks the ceiling. Breaks the ceiling. It's a rocket going through the ceiling. And Rav Moshe says, that's as far as the pure halacha. But Rav Moshe says, I want to be honest with you. I'm not happy. Dati lo nocha from the conversions going on in America. Remember, the year is 1950. Don't confuse this with Ivanka Trump. All these people who say Ivanka is not Jewish, there are over so many Isurim the Oraita, you don't have enough fingers to count it. And I can tell you that the conversion, Rabbi Haskell Lookstein, was a small element in the conversion. Do you know who the Av Beit Din was? Who Rabbi Lookstein brought in? Rav Heschel Shechter. Right or wrong? I spoke on him talking. I know this is an absolute fact. I'm not an eyewitness, but I'm an ear witness. No, you're going to question Rav Heschel Shechter? Ein bot kinach harayah misbeach. I know Rav Heschel for 70 plus years. He was a tzaddik as a kid. His mother cried to me, Ani, what will be with Heschel? That will be. I write about it in Washington. You read? Are you familiar with Washington or not? Who'd I write it for? My brother came home from Yeshiva Salanta shaking. My brother's a very skilled medical doctor specialist. All right, retired today, a drop younger than I am. And he came home, Ani, you won't believe what happened today. I said, Lenny, what are you talking about? Do you know what Heschel did? There was one teacher in Salanta we stood in awe of, Mrs. Ann Tamor. She was the mathematics teacher. So she asked, it was seventh grade or whatever, did you do your homework? So each kid, you know, shows her. She gets to Heshi, no homework. Shachta, why didn't you do your homework? And this chutzpan gets up in class and says, Mrs. Tamar, my father gave up a big rabbinate in Philadelphia. We moved to New York. We changed everything, only that I should be able to go to Yeshiva Salanta. I came here to learn Torah, not mathematics. My gosh, to speak that way to Mrs. Tamar? That's as a kid. His parents were right about him. I once sat with Rav Shechna. We made cheshbon of what we earn. I earn less a year than the money he gives to charity every year. The mice money that he gives is more than my entire gross salary. So if I could only meet his mother again, I would tell her, you have Mrs. Shachter, Rebetzin Shachter, you have nothing to worry about. Your son is going to work out okay. But he was the Avdeitin. That was a real Geirut. All right, I understand the dress is not the most neistic. I understand. But you got to remember, she was in that crowd from Gehilat Jeshurun. I'm not certain that in Gehilat Jeshurun, there are many other women, they come to shul dressed one way, and at public affairs, they're dressed another way. Then you get involved. What's neatest? And once you get involved with state, you're getting involved with certain subjective matters. I don't want to go into detail, but you all understand what I'm saying.
You know what the show was in Philadelphia? What kind of big Orthodox show in Philadelphia?
A Strawberry Mansion. He had the big shul, and Rabbi Leventhal told him that he would, I believe it was Strawberry Mansion. If anyone listening can correct me, but that's what I remember. And he was told by Rabbi Leventhal, you will succeed me as the chief rabbi of Philadelphia, Rabbi Melech Shachter. And he gave it all up so Rabbi Heschel should have an education. So, all right. Well, all I can tell you is I don't believe their behavior is any different than the standard behavior in Kehilat Jeshurun, in KJ. Not that I'm happy. My standards of tznius are higher than the KJ standards. And my standards of kashrut are higher. But I understand I have to be accepting. Baruch Hashem, Shomrei Shabbat, kashrut. Their children go to Ramaz. You're not allowed to say a word. But the 1950s, Rav Moshe says, I'm quoting Rav Moshe word by word, I am not happy with what is going on with Geirut in the United States. We know ourselves that the people converting are not going to observe. They are converting for the sake of marriage. Now, in parentheses, let me state it. I lectured on this for over a year. Originally, you'll see the Gemara in Yevamot. Originally, we were not happy about people converting for the sake of marriage. Bidiavad kulam geirim hem. Halacha lemaisa. If they did convert for the sake of marriage, as long as they become good, proper Jews, we accept them with an open heart. And you know the Rambam with Shlomo HaMelech and the Bat Paro, it's one of the most fascinating Rambams. What does the Rambam mean? We watch and see what is going to happen. Okay, what does it mean? How many generations can you watch? But halacha lemaisa b'dieved kulam geirim heim. But Reb Moshe says, I'm quoting Reb Moshe, kilo anan sahadeh. We know when she's in the mikvah and she says, I'm going to observe Shabbat and Kashrut and Tarat Mashpicha. If it's a man that fell in love with a Jewish girl on the in CCNY or in Nechveis, Columbia University, I'm going to observe Anan Sahadeh, they do not mean, and they're not going to observe. Now, Rav Moshe says, how do we know they don't mean it? And here, Rabbi Rubin will fill you in. Look, she's marrying a man who's a Mechalel Shabbos. The man is Mechalel Shabbos. He's marrying a lady who's Mechalel Shabbat. Where did you find Shomrei Shabbat in America in 1950? Where did you? A handful. You remember my classmate, my brilliant classmate, Rabbi Dr. Professor Chaim Soloveitchik, his magnum opus, in sociology, nothing to do with his magnum opus in Chachmat Yisrael and learning. It's a genius. Whatever he touched turned to gold. Rupture and reconstruction. Reb Chaim claims we lost it all. The whole Masorah was lost in America. This is why you need rulers on Pesach, how much matzah to eat, right or wrong. Remember I showed in Gruss elsewhere how much lettuce to eat. We don't need that. We know what our fathers ate, what our grandfathers ate. Today in America, the famous story with the kosh, with the Chofetz Chaim's daughter in Matzah. When Reb Mendel Zaks died, I mean, the country was shaking when that happened. It was everyone was talking about it. So when her husband Reb Mendel died, every Friday night a different yeshiva bacher came in to make kiddush for the Rebbetzin. And one time a kid comes in, and she gives him the kos, and he says, "I'm still the Rebbetzin, excuse me, but the kos is not big enough." And she tells him, "This is the coast the Chofetz Chaim made Kiddush on." You understand? Rupture and reconstruction right there before your eyes. Who is from? What's from? They're converting. What Shabbos? What if the Jewish-born partner doesn't keep Shabbos, doesn't keep Kashrut, doesn't keep Tarat Mishpacha? Suddenly, a stranger coming in for the sake of marriage is going to keep? So Rav Moshe says, what are these conversions all about? My dear students, when Rav Moshe dealt with this problem in Europe, he said the conversion is 1,000% absolutely worthless. He quoted his father. Do you know the Rav Gorin story with the Langer case? Was there a conversion? Wasn't there a conversion? One thing is for sure, if there was a conversion, it was a private conversion done ad hoc by her father, underground. No. What kind of conversion? He winds up in a church, eyewitnesses. Everyone refers to him as the Polish guy, documents Mesichim Lefi Tumam. What kind of conversion is this? Out. Don't look at it. Don't count it. Don't consider it. And here Reb Moshe throws a bombshell. Changes or modifies his attitude. And it all goes back to an unbelievable Gemara. There's a perek Klal Gadol in Masechet Shabbat, Samach Bet, Samach Gimel. You can look it up. And the Gemara talks there about Hamitgayer Bein Ha'akam. Quoting the Gemara, V'lo yada mi Shabbos, didn't know about Shabbat. And the Gemara is concerned, does he have to, when he finds out about Shabbat, does he have to bring one Karban Chatat for the Melachat he did, or for every Shabbat Karban? But forget about that question. That's not what concerns us. Klal Gadol with the Avat Malacha, with the Karban Chatat. How can you have a conversion and not know about Shabbat? All right, Tosfot already asks it. Other Rishonim ask it. And what the Rishonim simply say, and I'm translating it into modern language, is Rabbi Reuben gave him a book to read. How to be a Jew. This is my God. Whatever. Chaim Dolan's book. Herman Wouk's book. And Rabbi Reuben didn't notice that 49 pages were missing. The binding fell apart. So he memorized the book. But there was not one word in there about Shabbat. And yet he's converted. And the conversion is 100% correct, accepted in Rabbinic Hebrew, Chal. It took place. It's Bar Kiyuma. It is here. It is with us. It's a Jew. Our only concern is Korbanot. How many? The Jew didn't know about Shabbat. Unbelievable. So what does Rav Moshe say? What do we derive from that Gemara? That a person converts to be a Jew in accordance with his or her concept. What is Judaism? Fabulous. It's Rav Moshe. And Rav Moshe says, now let's look at contemporary times. She's converting. I'll use Rav Moshe's word. What kind of Jews did I grow up with in the Bronx? Who heard of a Shabbat in the Bronx? There's no such animal. Kashrut, some people were kosher in the house. After World War II, the Chinese restaurants opened. No, who were their customers? My aunts, my uncles. Who bought meat in the AMP? In the Safeway? This is 1950. A mikvah? Mandachashmei. What do you need? I mean, the conservative movement already threw it out. You have showers in the house, bathtubs in the house. Who needs a mikvah?
Don't you have to tell them the colors and the worst?
So they thought they would. No, you're missing the point. You're telling everything. Her attitude is, I'm going to be no different than my husband. His attitude is, I'm going to be no different than my wife. They're Jews. This is the key word. I'm a Jew. Whatever you're going to tell them, they take the attitude. That's the story I told you last week. The beautiful story with Rabbi Yaleb Christmas. He comes home from shul on Shabbos. The neighbor's children, the Bodetsky children, are writing with their chalk. And in his broken Hebrew, he was such a gentleman, he says to them, Yeladim, Shabbos Hayom, Asur im Hagir. It's forbidden to use the chalk. And they look at him, and in classic knowledge, look up at him and say, Rabbi, Anachnu lo datiyim, anachnu chiloniyim. Beautiful. You'll say to this lady, but the rabbi observes Shabbos. Yes, the rabbi, he's the religious figure. He's like a priest. The priest observes much more than the average Gentile. He goes to Mass every day. We're chiloniyim. We're Jews like all the Jews. What Rav Moshe says here is overwhelming. Now, you take what's going on, take a look at Israel. You ask the average Jew, who are the great Jews of today? All right? Bibi Netanyahu. Now, what are they accusing Sarah? What's going on now? She got champagne. It would seem to me that champagne is not kosher. Kosher champagne, I can go into Rami Levi and buy a beautiful bottle of kosher champagne for 30 shekels. But there must be, I don't know, fancy French. I know, I'm not a big connoisseur of wine, but I see people open a bottle. They smell it. It's a sight to see. Ah, they smell it. Ah, they're Tam Gan Eden. All right, I was raised on Malaga, on grape. On simple wine. Who had kosher wine? Whoever dreamt Israel would win prize after prize, international wines, particularly from the Golan Heights. It seems the mountains, yeah, the grapes there are supposed to be special. But I'm upset. With Sarah Netanyahu, you drink non-kosher wine? Well, how far will I get? Told you 1,000 times over. Herzl is an Adon Gadol. Show me his tefillin. Ben Gurion, let's talk about the fact. I mean, I'm not doing this sarcastically. I'm doing this la halacha. The average person converting, and by the way, with the Russian Jews, our greatest miracle was that they put them into refusal. Had they let them all out, they would have come to Israel. They would have been like everyone else, Moshe Dayan, Yitzchak Rabin, Ehud Barak. Go right down the line. Amir Peretz. Well, they would have been like everyone else. They're Jews, we're Jews. They're Zionists, we're Zionists. What more do you want from us? Because they won refusal and suffered and had the question. I'm listening to a recording now of Yosef at Tzadik Mendelovich talking about his life story. Yomo sent me a link. Everyone should listen to it. By the way, his English is...
Torah
is,
Anytime.
What's it called?
Torah Anytime.
Torah Anytime. Yosef Mendelovich. His English is quite good. Amazing. The man has quite a good mind. I remember when he arrived in Israel, I told you the first time he spoke in public, I translated. He spoke Hebrew. I couldn't believe it, and I translated into English. But he's quite good. They suffered. They questioned, why are we suffering? Why are we hated? Why are we different? And when a Jew starts to ask the four questions, you never know where it's going to end. You all know Rabbi Soloveitchik's Vart, Mori Rebbe's Vart, why the Haggadah has to begin with questions. We could just begin, Abadim, Ayinu, Lafaro. Why do we need the questions? To drive the kids crazy? Oh no. To teach our children, we want them to question. We want them to ask. When a Jew questions, we don't know where it's going to end. That's the way to come to totality of Torah Hashem Temima. It begins with Manishtana. And you see what happened with the Russian Jews. They own the state of Israel today. Every last one is a Shomer Shabbos. It's beyond words. Sharansky, I can tell you, he's a Shomer Shabbos. Lieberman, Kuptois via Bulvan. You should see who his wife and daughter are. And he's a Shomer Shabbos. The world doesn't know that. He has to play to his constituents. Elkin wears a kippah. No, head of the coalition. Edelstein, third most important person in Israel. Kippah, my student from Russia. Who can believe they own the country? But that's a result of God's hand, the Serivnikim, the refuseniks. And I have to tell you, just digress for one half second. Yitzhak, you won't believe this. Yours truly is a professional, outstanding liar. L-I-A-R. I never knew how good I lied. I had Gilui Eliyahu last week when I told you about. We got the call. A family we hadn't seen in 30 years, we knew from Russia, the Fradkin family of Leningrad, one of the few families that was Shomer Mitzvot all the years, a credit to Chabad, went through World War II, suffered, the mother died, the grandmother, our dear Sarah Fradkin. So they called us Tuesday night, they're getting up Thursday, but they remembered, maybe you would like to know, Amalka and I got there Wednesday. Ramat all the way out, Haredi, the area, beautiful area, all types of Chassidish. Everyone gets along, I'm told, they don't fight. Beautiful. Jews not to fight, the Frum Jews not to fight, is an advent to Mashiach, said Kano. And we get there, we're Menachem Mavel, I bring them a copy of Washington, I show them their pictures, they show me their pictures, I show them their pictures in Washington, and would you believe it? Fanya and Vladimir Fradkin believed that Malka and I were visiting from Queens. They believed until a week ago that we didn't live in Israel and subsequently at some point came on Aliyah. And Malka and I couldn't get over it. What a capable, competent liar Aaron Rakefa is, and I compliment him in the name of the Mossad, the department called the Nativ, Yasha Kayacha. If Aryeh Crow was still alive, I would have called him to tell him, Aryeh, ata lo tamin makarali in Mishpachat Fratkin. Reb Moshe here is overwhelming. The insight, the Chiddush, and I'll end off for today, we'll pick up next week. So Rav Moshe says, look, I'm not happy about this Geirut. I would like to go back to my father's position. But what can I do? I'm in America. Many of my Chaverim, he's referring to the Agudas HaRabbanim, many of my Chaverim in the Union of Orthodox Rabbis of the United States and Canada do these conversions. I'm a Lamed Zchut. There is something to these conversions. We cannot nullify or void them. And this is what Rav Moshe paskins lahalacha.
So why isn't this accepted today to solve the problem?
Michael, why is it today that there's so much hatred among Orthodox Jews? I'm going to show you tomorrow morning in class a comment I got on my Monday's lecture that is filled with vicious mistruths, real lies. And you're asking me such a question?
And if Israel would accept Rav Moshe's position, they could solve their problem.
Of course, this is obvious.
If someone sells in advance,
yeah, but
I am not going to observe.
Right.
Shabbos.
Right.
Then you can't do it.
This is so they told them they wouldn't lie.
No, so you don't want that. So I'll tell you.
No,
I'll tell you halacha l'maisa. Give me 1 second. I'm watching the clock. 1 second. Baruch Atah
Melech Olam Shekhar Mivet Barom. There are many conversions for marriage
today. The halacha, I would pass him this way. We have to do our best to try to inspire them to be total from Jews. I know that the Tzohar conversion classes work where each person, when they gets into the program seriously, they're assigned to a frum family. There are frum families, some of our frum Jews are the greatest people in the world. We're all shaking and reeling with the tragedy of Shabbos, with Beit and Peyus killing 4 people on Shabbos. I mean, it's beyond conception. But they are the minority. Some of our frum families are the finest, most wonderful Jews you will meet anywhere in the world. So they're assigned to frum families. They have to spend Shabbat, they have to spend Yatta. We have to do the best we can. But then you convert them. Maybe 10 years later you'll do a survey, you'll see 20% they're not totally frum. La halacha, they're still Jewish.
Because at the time they accept the Shabbos?
I can't understand.
At the time they converted, they accept, that's why...
Yeah, well, they say they're accepting. This is what we're talking about. But you're going to claim 20 years later, 10 years later, 7 years later, you don't have to feel bad. B'dieved, they are Jews. This is what Rav Moshe is saying, and this is what I would paskim lahalacha. But the program has to be set up that the basic elements of success are there. But we have to face a reality, we are never totally successful. What happened Shabbos, is that mean we're going to say, wipe Breslov off the map, assuming they were Breslov Hasidim, which is what they look like. If Rabbi Berlant of Breslov goes to jail, are we going to say, wipe Breslov off the map? If the chief rabbi will soon be in jail, are we going to say, wipe Kerem B'Yavner off the map? Rakefet produced many victories. I produced a number of failures too. I can tell you that. At the Shira Chadasha Minyan are some of my own Talmidim from the Kolel and from BMT. At Chovevei Torah, I have quite a number of Talmidim from this very Kolel. Maybe one or two from BMT. All right, I have failed. But Moshe Rabbeinu didn't succeed with everyone any as well, right or wrong. Look at the Chumash. We have to do the best we can. This man of Mashiach Zitkenu, when the Hashgacha will be Geluya, there's no question there'll be 100% success. But now we have to work with the reality. So we absolutely have to continue with classes, with encouragement, with inspiration. Halavai. give it the optimal chance. B'di'evid, do not feel bad. So let me read it. We're not finished with Reb Moshe yet. There's a very interesting little paragraph here that brings us back to the Litvisher concepts. And it's amazing to see it in Reb Moshe, black and white. What did we do today? Okay, Baruch Hashem, we dealt with the Melamed Lahoyel and the Mishnah Halachot and Reb Moshe, and how Reb Moshe's thinking, totally independent of the Melamed Lahoyel, Reb Moshe's thinking coming from the Gemara in Shabbos HaMitkayeh Bein HaAkam, how he reaches a very similar conclusion. What is Judaism to the Jew or the would-be convert? Unfortunately, Bizman Hazer, after the Enlightenment, we are still the minority. The majority are not Shomrei Shabbos. In Israel, it's starting to change. We're going to see what happens now with Tel Aviv. Could you imagine Aryeh Deri publicly, instead of saying that, quoting Bialik, that more than the Jews have observed Shabbat, Shabbat has observed the Jews and enabled us to survive, he has to think about whether the store should be open or closed in Tel Aviv. I hope it's only klapei chutz. I hope he doesn't mean it. I hope it's only a political stance. But it hurts me to see. If I would be the Minister of the Interior, I would announce loud and clear, Shabbat is the greatest gift that God gave the Jewish people. Okay? Israel is changing. We have a long way to go to see America and Canada, Australia, South Africa, Britain, Russia join us. But we can't give up the battle, and Efshar L'Smoch al Reb Moshe. I wouldn't miss tomorrow's class, even if you're on an LL plane. Tell them, hook you up and let you off. Come down, and you get back on the plane later. I'm going to show you a response to last Monday's lecture and try to declare the truth. Although everyone listening, those that want to accept the truth will, and those who don't will still tell the lies and pass it on. That's the nature of the beast today. Intellectual dishonesty is more common than a person who studied with the Rav and knew the Rav's attitude towards forgery, intellectual forgery. And tomorrow we go back to Rav Yitzchak Kuttner. Very fascinating shiur. Some of the freebies. My friend Rabbi Marvin Haier, I consider his invocation to be fantastic. And he admits it was done on purpose, so everyone should know about Jerusalem. A fabulous article from Bamishpacha on Hechsherim, on hotels, Kiddushim on Shabbos. And I have to say, a lot of what's in the article I have said years ago when I got a tour of the Waldorf Astoria Hotel, Kashid, a little part of the kitchen, Kashid for Simcha. If Rakefir had his way, no hotel can be kashid for a simcha. Make your smachat in Israel, where the hotels are kosher all year, or in America, where they have a designated locked up kosher kitchen from where the food comes from. It's quite an honest article. This is a great achievement. It's actually a relative of mine by marriage, the multi-billionaire, whose library was now bought by Hebrew University. It doesn't say how much money they had, how much money they got. Very fascinating. These are all articles on going into the church, Trump's, what went on in Washington, and all articles about the poor Krishna couple that is getting all the compliments and all the arguments. And finally, this is for Yitzchak. And Michael, give us a Bahu Rachum Sidurim here, and until we meet again in health and happiness, Das Vidanya.